I'm going to shrink up the message today just because I feel like maybe there's something that God wanted to do this morning, the testimonies. But I realize this as we're in this series, and I don't think it has anything necessarily to do with the idea of neighboring or loving. I think there's an element in there that God's doing. But I realized how conditioned we become as people. And this week for myself, I didn't have near as good of stories and testimonies as you guys had. Normally fasting for me at the end of the week, I'm like really excited and energized. But it was like the opposite for me this week. Like I felt more annoyed, more irritated, more difficult. Just everything was just like almost this burden on me. And I say that not, it makes it sound super spiritual. It wasn't. It was purely Zach being God working in things in my life, dealing with certain feelings and emotions. But I realized this, okay, and I shared this with our volunteers this morning as we jumped into our prayer time. I realized this one thing, that social media, the media itself, in itself, is not a bad thing. And we're not saying as a church, hey, don't spill your coffee on the floor. And it's okay because, you know, I'm the pastor, so... So I realized how much social media itself, what it does is it conditions us and makes almost this idea of thinking not a part of our life. And I say this, I mentioned this, and you have to flow with me on this, but that social media and media itself gets you to the place it almost removes thinking. And what it does is it almost emphasizes and replaces an emotional response. And so we live through media outlets where basically, it tells us, don't think about this, just respond emotionally. Now, whether that's posting, liking, whatever that be, it doesn't matter on that level. But I realized this myself this week. I spent more time thinking, which sounds, you're like, good job, Zach. My pastor thinks this week. Thank you. I had a good week. I thought a lot. But if you think about this, examine it. I spent the week typically... You know, social media, you scroll through, you like, you post, and you move on. At least that's how I do it. It's like, it's kind of that feeds that fix to the day. You check on things, you notice things, you react to things, and then you move on. And I realized this week, I found myself that you begin to think more, to ponder, to reflect. And the things throughout the whole week, I begin to think about it through the entire week. And it wasn't so much an emotional response, it wasn't just a quick do this, do that, move on. But it was kind of this process that sat with me all week, good or bad. And I realized that so many times in our walk with God, in our church life, in our individual life, that we become conditioned to things. We get conditioned to how things should act, and how things should respond, and how we move, and how we do, and how we decide. All comes back to this conditioning in our life. And it's what we always do. And when you begin to step back from things, you realize, what are the certain things that I'm so conditioned to respond in? And this week, you might even recognize it yourself, maybe you do this, but even psychologists have said that the social media has and media in itself has become such a huge part of our life that there's actually a syndrome, I think it's called, the kind of this phantom vibration. I can't remember the official name, but they say that we begin to kind of have these feelings that our phone is vibrating. It's like this condition that my phone's ringing. And it's like we mentally think of it. And it's so ingrained in our life that we get conditioned to these certain behaviors in our life. And even this week, we've been at a grocery store and I hear a ding. And it's like, oh, I'm going to check my phone. It's social media or it's a Facebook post. And it's like, oh no, it's not my phone. It's the person next to me. And you see how quickly these things become conditioned. And I reflected this week as we were talking about this, how this relates to neighboring and loving our neighbor and hospitality, which is an aspect of neighboring. Hospitality is something that I think for most people in the church and even outside the church, it's an uncomfortable thing. It's a difficult thing. It's not a natural thing. It takes work to invite someone over. It takes work, like we said, to clean our house, prepare dinner, get everything just right to have someone come over. For most people, statistics show that they do not invite people into their home. They do not welcome others into their life. And we keep people at this distance. We talked a little bit last Sunday that the concept of that is that we try to protect ourselves. If we allow someone to get too close, we may get hurt, we may be betrayed, and so it's easier for me to keep you there, and I'm here, and we function with this space between us. And as in social media, and sometimes in our culture, we make that seem like that's a relationship. That's what it's supposed to be. That's what it's supposed to look like, when all reality is it's tricking us and giving us a false sense of community. But hospitality, true hospitality, is when you open your life and you welcome somebody into your life. And they begin to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. That you begin to be real. You begin to be who you are. And that relationship begins. I was sharing with someone this week that there's just something that happens when you welcome somebody into your home. Can it happen at a grocery store, a restaurant? Yes. But I think there's something significant. When you invite someone into your home, your space, your domain, and you share a meal together, there's something that happens. I can't explain, I can't give you what happens, but there's something that happens, a shared life. I get this picture of when you put two pieces of duct tape together and when you try to remove it, what happens? You barely can get them apart. This side of the duct tape and this side of duct tape, there are pieces of this on this side and this side on this side that you'll never get back to being specifically itself once again. That when they touch, something happens and they become part of each other. We see that obviously in an idea of a marriage and a family, but we also see that same picture with a relationship in community, that when you share life together, there's something that happens. There's something that happens. And so hospitality, for, like we talked about last week, there are barriers, there are difficulties to do that. It's hard. I don't have time. My house isn't set up for that. Or I don't know anybody. We talk about kind of the different barriers / excuses we use. And like I said, I wasn't calling anyone out. I was using my own example, my own life, that I use. I'm too busy. Oh, I don't know anybody. Or my house isn't ready for that. Or I just, we're not set up to do that. Or this season of life, I just can't do that. But to be honest with you, that's pretty contrary to what the Bible says. The Bible says that hospitality is something that defines who we are. That when you look at a believer, when you look at a Christian, when you look at someone who follows Jesus, hospitality is that outward sign that you see in them. This idea of welcoming others, inviting people in your life, sharing life together is something that we see. Paul reminds us in Romans chapter 12, and I'm going to splice the sermon together with a few things, so just follow with me on this morning. But he goes on and says this very interesting phrase. He says, in Romans chapter 12, he says, practice hospitality. Practice hospitality. Now, just an open discussion here. Why would someone practice something, whether it's baseball, guitar? I mean, Beth, do you practice? Do you practice playing the guitar? Do you practice that? Why? Why do we practice? Anyone?
To get better,
to improve. If you want to succeed at something, you were always told as a kid, practice makes what?
Perfect.
Like the worst thing. Yeah, practice right, of course, you know. Practice, when you do something over and over and over, it becomes second nature, it becomes natural. I would bet Derek, when he says he can probably play the guitar with his eyes closed and really not thinking about it. Because why? Because it's become so ingrained in who he is and how he plays that it becomes who he is. So when you give yourself to practice, you basically become part of that, to learn and to do what it's calling you to do. So when Paul reminds us, practice hospitality, I think for most of us in this room, myself included, is I think, okay, I need to schedule 5 times a month to hang out with someone and invite someone, which is in itself is okay. But I think Paul was wanting to go a little beyond that. See, I think hospitality is a lifestyle, not a project we do. And I like to think of hospitality as a project. Because for me, it still creates this element in my life where I don't have to commit to it 100%. Now, I'm just speaking of myself, but I think most of us would relate. When I think of projects, I think when I get time or when I have the ability, I will do that. And if my wife is here today, she's homesick with kids, she would say, we have a lot of projects that have not been completed, right? See, we tend to push projects off. Anyone else in the room admit they're a procrastinator? Look at that, majority of the room, procrastinators. When it comes to projects, I have an app on my phone that's called a to-do list. Okay? There's a lot of to-dos on that list that have been on that list for many, many weeks. Because in my mind, projects become something that I can push off and get to when I have time. When I feel like it. When I want to. When something approaches, I'll do it. And when it does approach us, we think, okay, I'm about due to do this project. Let's get it done. Let's do it. And I think Paul is reminding us that hospitality, practicing hospitality, is not a project that we check off, but it's a lifestyle we live. It's who we are. It's everything we're about is a part of our life. That hospitality is what we do on a regular basis, not what we schedule it. Now, I think practically, because we are practical people, we do need to begin to practice. I mean, you need to schedule things. And like myself, we invited somebody over this week that hadn't been to our house before, and I was like, okay, we need to invite somebody over today. And I, before even thinking about it, I texted them and said, hey, you want to come over for dinner tonight? And he quickly replied and said yes. And so I'm like, oh crap, no. I was kind of hoping he would say no and be like, hey, I asked. I was like, oh God, what are you doing? You know? And then I had to convince Sarah to have someone over and say, hey, we need to invite somebody. But I had to step out, I had to do it, because if I waited, I would push it off like every other project on my honey to-do list. So how do we begin to practice hospitality? How do we begin to do this? And this morning we're going to look at a passage that's not a very typical, common, communicated passage that you hear a lot about. But the story in 2 Kings is a story of a woman who lived hospitality as a lifestyle, not just a project. And so my heart this morning is to help us catch this heart of hospitality. Begin to realize that every single one of us can begin to live hospitable. And I loved every story today because it illustrated exactly what hospitality looks like. Hospitality is not this nice little package that everybody has to do it a certain way. It's people finding ways to connect with those playing basketball in the park. Jehovah's Witnesses coming to the door. People they encounter on a weekly basis, social media, all these play a part of where and how we can incorporate hospitality. So, if you have a Bible, turn with me to 2 Kings chapter 4. 2 Kings chapter 4, an Old Testament story, which I love. It's a great story, and maybe you've heard it before, but it's a unique story in the Old Testament, talking about this woman. We don't know her name. Most commentators in the Bible refer to this woman as the Shunammite woman. And we're going to see more of kind of what she does, and we kind of get a glimpse of hospitality. Now, to jump into this, there's a prophet who is traveling. His name is Elisha. You've maybe heard of his name before, but Elisha was a prophet that traveled around, and he basically proclaimed God's will throughout the region. He was in the northern kingdom of Israel. And most of the time, when prophets traveled, they would depend upon God to bring resources, to provide food and shelter as they traveled from city to city. And they lived basically on those in the community that would help them. We catch this unique story of Elisha traveling through in 2 Kings chapter 4. And follow along and read this with me. 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 8. Follow on the screen if you don't have a Bible. It says this: one day Elisha went to the town of Shunem. A wealthy woman lived there, and she urged him to come to her home for a meal. After that, whenever he passed that way, he would stop there for something to eat. Now, this interesting story we see here, Elisha's traveling, he's passing through, and he comes to this town, Shunem, where he's passing through. We don't know if he's coming there to speak or if he's just passing by, but somehow he runs into this woman. She recognizes that this man needs a place to eat, maybe a place to rest. And she says, come to my house where my husband and I live, and we will feed you. Now, he came, and we see in this passage that That he came multiple times after that. We don't know how long it was, but it looks like every time he passed by the area, he would stay with them, and she would feed him, and they would give him rest, and he would move on from there. We see that this woman gives a very interesting recognition of this woman in the Bible. It says that she's a wealthy woman. Now, some of the downfalls of some of the translations today in our English translation is that when they use the word wealthy, we think immediately that she was full of money, right? That she had a ton of money. Now, commentators would say that this might not have been the case. It could have been, but this word wealthy doesn't necessarily refer to finances. But it actually is referred to in the Hebrew word as mighty and great. That she was mighty and great. Now, it could have been financial tie-ins to this, but the commentaries and even the original language looks to her character more than her financial stability. There was something in this woman that was recognized by others that she was great and mighty. And many believe it was her character and her heart and her desire to serve others. There was something within her when she saw the need of Elisha, not knowing who he was, not knowing what he did. She recognized that this man needed something. And she said, "All I have is a place that you can come and eat, and I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you so it provides you rest and meals and shelter." She was mighty and great. This woman trusted God and she served wherever she was. And we see reflections in the Old Testament that hospitality and this act of giving was something that was very common in the Old Testament law. Just, you don't have to turn there, but just quickly, Leviticus, the law said, and told those who professed faith in God, who lived trusting God, said that in Leviticus, when you harvest the crops of your land, do not harvest the grain along the edges of your field. Do not pick up the harvesters that you drop. It is the same with your grape crop. Do not strip every last bunch of grapes from the vines. And do not pick the grapes that fall on the ground. Leave them for the poor and the foreigners living among you. I am the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 15, another law says, give generously to the poor, not grudgingly, for the Lord your God will bless you in everything you do. There will always be some in the land who are poor. That is why I am commanding you, share freely with the poor and with other Israelites in need. She recognized Elisha's need, and she welcomed him into her home. And I would imagine there were many stories, many things shared, prayers, conversations. And we see repeatedly that Elisha went back there time and time again. Then we see here in verse 9, as we continue the stories, she said to her husband, after some time of hosting Elisha, she said to her husband, I'm sure this man who stops in from time to time is a holy man of God. Let's build a small room for him on the roof and furnish it with a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. Then he will have a place to stay whenever he comes by. One day, Elisha returned. He went up to his upper room to rest. And he said to his servant, Gehazi, something like that. Next child, if you have a child, name him. Gehazi. Tell the woman, I want to speak to her. And when she appeared, he spoke to his servant, tell her that we appreciate the kind concern you've shown us. What can we do for you? Can we put in a good word to the king, the commander of the army? She replied and said, no, my family takes good care of me. Later, Elisha asked again, what can we do for her? The servant replied, she doesn't have a son, and her husband is an old man. I love how he's, you know, judgmental here. She doesn't have a son, her husband's super old. Hey, you're kind. He said, call her back again, Elisha said. When the woman returned, Elisha said to her as she stood in the doorway, he said, next year at this time, you'll be holding a son in your arms. And I love her response. She says, no, my Lord. She cried out, oh man of God, don't declare or don't deceive me and get my hopes up like that. But sure enough, the woman soon became pregnant. And the time the following year, she had a son, just as Elisha had said. It's an interesting story here. We see this passage of Elisha coming, this woman extending not only a meal, but a place that he could rest, And she recognizes that there can be more that can be done. So she turns to her husband and she says, you know that addition that you wanted to build for your man room, right? You know that man cave you wanted to build? I think we need to build it and give it to Elisha. We don't know what the husband said, but we see quickly that they begin to build an addition onto the house. This addition was built for Elisha, with a bed, a lamp, a chair, a place that he could rest. And they gave him this extra addition to their house. And Elisha, like most of us, when given with such generosity, he's like, well, what can I do? Can I go on your behalf to God? Can I talk to the king, the army? Is there something you want? Is there something I can do to repay you for such generosity and hospitality to me? And she says, no, I'm good. What's mine is yours. I expect nothing in return. Which I love that heart, because so many times in our life, if we really get honest, I find myself doing things for others with the hope that I can get something back. I give or I help with the idea that, well, I am kind of expecting something back. I think for most of us, we would agree and say that would be the case. That sometimes our motives is good, but we also kind of expect something back to us. I love the clip I was watching here not too long ago, Home Alone 2. We've all seen that movie. And there's a scene in there where the doorway guy, whatever you call him, what do you call those guys, the bellhop, whatever, he helps him up to his room, and he's like, well, can I show you how to run the TV? Can I turn the heat on? Can I get the bed ready? No, everything's good, I'm good. And he sits there and he's like, you know, remember that little scene? Like expecting something. And of course his kid's like, oh, sorry. He pulls out a piece of gum and gives him a piece of gum. So his idea was, I'm expecting something in return. I'm hoping to do this and to get something back. But we see this woman, her desire was to serve without expecting anything back. Colossians 3 says this, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Again, hospitality, I believe, is something we live, not something we do. I want to give you three practical ways to make this part of your lifestyle. And these are short, and then we're going to end with a video clip that I want us to watch. This passage, I hope, will sit in your heart. Hopefully you'll read it, take time to study it, think about it. But this woman displayed this true godly character to serve and to give. She didn't give anything extravagant necessarily. She didn't do anything crazy and absurd, but she gave everything she had with what she had. She simply said, my house is your house. I don't have a whole lot of other things, but I can give you what I have. And I can give it to you the best that I can. And I believe Elisha recognized that heart to give and to serve. It cost money for her to build the addition. It took time. I would imagine that they probably had other ideas that they would want to turn that space into something else. But she said, instead, I have something extra that I don't need that I can give to you. And she displayed this idea of what hospitality looks like. So how do we begin to do that? The first thing I want you to do is write this down. You start with who you know. Hospitality begins with starting with who you know. So many times we sometimes think, well, I need to just pick up the next person I see on the block and ask them to come to my house. No, you could probably get in trouble for that, and it probably could be very awkward. If you're like, oh, my pastor said I needed to have someone in my house, you're the first person I saw. You want to come to my house tonight? It would be very creepy. Hey, come in my van. You're going to come to my house. Call the police. Or at the grocery store, turn around and say, hey, I'm making extra food. You want to come over? Most people are going to say, no, stay away from me. You're weird. So start with who you know. Okay? Do me a favor. Look around the room, the person next to you. Most of us in this room do not know every single person. You might recognize them as they're the person who does coffee, they're the person that plays the guitar, they're that person, this person, and you see them on a weekly basis. How easy would it be for you to start here and say, let's have dinner this week. Why don't you come to my house? Let's do something together this week. I want to get to know you. I know you go to our church. Let's connect. You have a great opportunity. You have a whole room here to pick from. Okay? Pick somebody and say, let's practice hospitality by going out to meal. Let's get a group of people. Let's do this together. Let's get to know you. And it's okay. Maybe group up with two or three people and say, hey, let's have game night. None of us know each other that great. Let's hang out and get to know each other. Number two is this. Another key element of learning for hospitality is take what is normal and make it intentional. This is one thing that I've always learned in ministry, is that so many times we try to schedule things like this, and don't get me wrong, I think it's a good thing. It's not always bad, but how many things do you do on a normal, regular basis that you could be intentional with? How many of you guys grocery shop? Four of you in the room. So the rest of you, I don't know how you get food at your house. Steal it, deliver, okay, there we go, I guess there's some more techy things. Online, Derek steals food. If you invite Derek over to your house, he's probably going to empty your fridge. So you're missing the cheese and the milk. Derek has it. But you do something normal. So you go grocery shopping. Well, invite someone else and say, hey, let's go grocery shopping together. Let's go down the aisles, let's shop together, let's hang out, let's talk. Hey, we have to eat, right? Everyone in this room eats. Well, why don't you share a meal with somebody and say, hey, why don't you bring this and I'll bring this and let's find a time to meet, have dinner together. Take what is normal and make it intentional. The last thing is this, which is the key to this, is you need to be willing to initiate. So many times we want to be hospitable, we want a neighbor, but we expect someone to come to us. When in reality, hospitality means that you put yourself out there and you welcome people. You bring them to you. I always get this conversation, people will say, well, no one hung out with us. We just didn't connect because, you know, no one invited us over. And I always would say this, did you invite anyone over? Well, no, I mean, we thought that it was, you know, that way, you know. Well, you might have to invite somebody out to do something. Sarah and I used to, for a long time, get so frustrated. I mean, no one calls us to do anything. I was like, oh, crap. We should probably invite someone over. We should probably initiate that. It'd be so much easier if we didn't ever have to initiate anything, right? It doesn't work that way. If you want to connect with somebody, call them. Go after somebody. Ask them. Engage with them. There's an interesting article as I close with this. The guy lived an entire year. He said, nobody invites people over anymore. We live in a culture today where people are so busy, they're so individual, isolated, that they just don't connect with anybody anymore. And we talked about this last week. There are a lot of elements that that's true. So he said this, for one entire year, I'm going to invite myself over to people's homes. He lived an entire year. He said, the only way this is going to work is if I invite myself over. He found out that people were more willing to accept that because they believed that they probably would have never initiated it. But because you stepped out and said, hey, can I come to your house for dinner tomorrow? Which is a bold, bold thing. People were more willing and said they appreciated it more because they probably never would have done it on their own. Now, we had this conversation last week in the hall. Is it better to call and tell them you're coming over or just to show up? So, Sarah and I and the kids show up at your house this week about 5:30-ish. Hey, are you eating dinner? Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll ask what you're making first, and then we'll decide. Data dot casserole, we're just coming to pray for you. Nobody likes data dot casserole.
You like green beans too.
I'm kidding. I still don't like data dot casserole, but if you make it, the blood of Jesus covers it, and I will eat it. Pray over the meal. This is a known fact in our house. I told my wife when I got married, I do not eat tater tot casserole. I just do do not like it. For some reason, but if you have enough hot sauce and sour cream, I can probably get through it. So, well, we're going to cancel this video, and we'll post it online, but I want to mention this as we close. Why don't you stand to your feet, and we have an opportunity here. I believe one of the greatest ways as we are convicted, as we're stirred to live hospitality and play it a little different than normal, just because we had to make some changes, and we had an opportunity. We do have an opportunity in a couple weeks to have a conversation with two guest speakers. And I really want to encourage you to be a part of this the next couple weeks, because we want to talk about our community. I think it's easy to look at this idea of love your neighbor, be hospitable, and we get excited about it. But every one of us know when we leave here, we're like, oh, I just don't know what to do. How do I do this? It's overwhelming. It's difficult. And even myself this last week, I found myself like, okay, let's invite somebody. I'm like, why is this so hard? Why is this so difficult? So I want us to begin to practice this. How do we engage with this? We see all through the Bible, it talks about really providing hospitality as a way to connect and to love those, to share God's love and hope with others. So we have an opportunity. We have two guest speakers. We mentioned this in the video, and it changed, so don't listen to the announcements because it changed a little bit. But in two Sundays, March 26th, we have President Greg Henson from the Sioux Falls Seminary. He has done a lot of research on poverty in Sioux Falls. He's going to come and share what poverty looks like in our context. We all have, just like the word wealthy, we all have this idea of what poverty is. And you'll be blown away at what poverty looks like in Sioux Falls. And understanding, how do we help those who need help? There's interesting facts, statistics, as well as a biblical command. So we're going to hear about that. And the following Sunday, April 2nd, we have LSS Refugee Group coming in, and they're going to share about the refugee and immigrant transition here to Sioux Falls. They're going to talk about what that looks like, how they do it, how they handle it, how is it working here, and then at the end, they're going to share how we can help neighbor and show hospitality to those that we would call foreigners, those coming outside in that need a loving hand, need a home, need a place to be cared for. They talk a lot about just simply going grocery shopping with them, inviting them over for dinner to help them make that transition. And so we're going to hear from them April 2nd on the LSS and their kind of refugee program here. And we're going to hear how we can help with that. So what I'm excited for is to kind of conclude this series with really two practical, tangible ways for us to understand how do we live this forward. But it starts with us. How can we show hospitality to one another? How can we begin to make hospitality a lifestyle, not just a project to-do list, not something we check off or something we say, you know what, I'll get to it someday. Because my honey-do lists never shrink. They just keep getting bigger and bigger. Longer and longer, I push it aside. I heard great stories this week of people inviting their actual next-door neighbor over to their home. Heard stories of individuals who knew somebody who was homeless on the street, and they brought them food to them. Can you imagine if we begin to make this a continual thing? Inviting someone from within church to come over, have a meal, to watch a movie, to play games, whatever it might be. What God can do in our churches. So this week, let's pray about how we can continue to make hospitality a lifestyle, not just a project. Let's pray. God.